Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. I'm your host, Big Waz, of course, a.k.a. Wozni Lambray, for those of you who are just new to the program. That's my a.k.a., my alias, if that's the word, or was that a terrible Jennifer Garner show? I can't remember. Joined, as always, by my partner, the sexy, sultry Latin himself, Nando Vila. What's up, brother?
How's it going, baby?
Good, good, good. On today's show, we're going to get into... There's no other way to put this. It's a crisis, what's going on with the Supreme Court right now. The Republicans are ready to jam this one right up our asses with no Vaseline. We got to get into that. But first things first, Nando, we want to talk about who the candidates are that Trump and the GOP have sort of leaked via various sources that they're considering. Who are they looking at to vacate the seat of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg of Brooklyn, New York?
So they Trump has indicated in the past, in the recent past, that he is thinking about a woman, that he wants a woman to fill the next Supreme Court seat, whichever one became available. And it's like they're kind of doing that thing where they're kind of cynically owning the libs by using identity politics against them, you know, kind of finding like it's a woman.
Woman for you. Shut up.
Woman for you. You should like this. So there are two nominees. One is like more favored than the other. One of them is Barbara Lagoa, a Cuban American from Miami, who cut her teeth in the legal profession defending the Elian Gonzalez family against the Clinton administration. The Elian Gonzalez family in Miami, not the one back in Cuba. So I don't know if anyone remembers the Elian Gonzalez.
He washed up on shore on a banana boat.
Yeah, kind of. The very quick summary is that Elian Gonzalez was a kid who went on a raft to Miami. Everyone that he was on the raft with died except for him, so he kind of made it alone. And I think his mother died is the real important thing. So then he had family in Miami, not immediate family, so like not mother, father, but he had like aunts and uncles in Miami. And when he got to Miami, the father who was back in Cuba was like, well, I'm his father, like he should come back. And so the Cuban Americans in Miami were like, no, this guy came to Miami. You know, he has the legal right to be in the United States if he wants to. And his family was kind of arguing that they could be the guardians of him because he was underage. He was like 13 or something at the time. And the Clinton administration argued, I think correctly, that at the end of the day, his father is his legal guardian and should be able. So they sent him back. And this is like a huge debacle in the Cuban American community. They'll never forget. They'll never forgive Janet Reno. I remember.
Yeah. Little Elian. He was on the news every single day. Cute little Cuban boy.
Yeah. Every single day. I grew up in Miami at the time. I remember
back
perfectly.
To your country, like Elian.
At Heat games, people were holding up like giant signs saying like justice for Elian.
Go back to your country.
Elian Gonzalez became the most important political cause. But it is true that the Clinton administration kind of sent in like a SWAT team to get him out. It was pretty over the top. The whole situation was just ridiculous. But I remember
the 90s. How quaint.
Yeah, how quaint. Like, imagine that whole thing going down today. It'd be so she cut her teeth in the Elian Gonzalez thing, basically fighting the Clinton administration. She has since been like a, you know, some sort of appellate judge in Florida, then became the first Hispanic woman to be on the Supreme Court of Florida. This is what they're going to do is like, oh, look, she's Latinx. She's BIPOC. You should love her. You know, you should confirm her. She's a wise Latina, kind of like Sonia Sotomayor. So that's one option. And the other option is this woman named Amy Barrett. And she
talks to us about Amy Barrett, please.
Yeah, she seems like the overwhelming favorite. Like, she seems like the top of the at the top of the list. Amy Barrett was a clerk for Antonin Scalia, who, of course, is like the hero of all the conservative judges. And she was like a, you know, professor at Notre Dame. She's a judge out there in South Bend, Indiana. And the big thing about Amy Barrett is that, you know, she has that kind of Scalia thing where, like, libs and people in the profession will be like, you know what, I may disagree with her politically, but God damn it, she's a great jurist, you know, like, which is what they would always say. She's a brilliant legal mind. But, you know, the reality is that Amy Barrett is a pretty dogmatic Catholic, which is going to become the big issue that you're going to hear all the time. It's like, you know, don't bring her religion into it. Don't bring her religion into it. It's gross to, like, attack someone for their religious beliefs. And to the extent that that's true, the reality is that her Catholic faith, I mean, in theory, has informed her very extreme stance against abortion. I mean, that is her big thing. She is a hardcore pro-lifer. She has adopted two Haitian boys, you know. you know, she's one of those, like, kind of like pro-lifers who kind of actually goes and
does the thing. She practices what she preaches.
Exactly. You know, which is why liberals and women's groups and things like that are horrified at the possibility of having her on the court, because it looks like it would put Roe v. Wade on the table. Like, if some suit came to the Supreme Court, like, she would absolutely kind of rule against the Roe v. Wade, which protects, you know, abortion rights in all the land. So that's her big thing. You're going to see all manner of, like, conservative hooting and hollering about, like, I can't believe how gross it is to, you know, bring someone's religious views into question when you're talking about her, you know, fitness for the court. And even some liberals are saying, like, you know, I may disagree with her politically, but we can't bring into the Catholic thing. And it's like, and, like, there's already people saying, like, this is another example of gross anti-Catholic bigotry, which, like, I grew up Catholic. That does not exist anymore. Like, that used to exist.
Yeah, maybe in, like, the 1950s. Like, yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But I want to stay on the point of Roe v. Wade, because that seems to be the sort of sticking point for most of the libs when they talk about the terror of this sixth conservative joining the court. It's this idea that they're going to challenge Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, and this isn't founded on any facts or, you know, anything objective as far as empirical evidence.
Yeah.
But I tend to not believe that the conservatives actually care about Roe v. Wade. I think it's something they use to, it's red meat for the base, because their most fervent people are the hardcore racists and the God botherers, and some of them happen to intersect, but you know what I mean, right? Like, it's something they did. It's like the Dems with immigration. Like, what's your plan on immigration? Well, we don't really have, we just know we love immigrants. That's all, you know. It's like, I don't know that they're actually, you know, worried about it. But at the same time, maybe they are like, fuck it. If we get rid of abortion, who cares? We'll still be able to get abortions for our mistresses. Yeah. We'll put them on a first-class flight to Canada and boom, done. Like,
you're right. You're 100% right, Waz, in identifying that the sort of power players in the Republican Party, the people who, like, actually matter, the people in power, the sort of, you know, the brazen plutocrats who control that party don't give a shit about abortion. They really don't give a shit about abortion. They only care about abortion to the extent that it can whip up the rubes.
Yep.
You know, like, they need the rubes. They need like, and they see them that way. I mean, they have total contempt for their own base. But they know that they need votes to support their very unpopular economic agenda, which is basically redistribution upward to the 1%.
That's the number. So that's number one.
That's what they really care about. So they use things like corporate abortion. Power.
That's exactly. That's the number. Like, if you know, you take a class action lawsuit all the way to the Supreme Court, it's like, you're going to lose. They're going to rule in favor of the corporation. That's what they really want to cement.
And let's be clear, Amy Barrett and even this woman, Barbara Lagoa, would 100% rule in favor of the corporation every single time. And that's really what matters at the end of the day. And you're right that I think that the Roe v. Wade repeal is kind of the nuclear option for these people. Like, it's like, if okay, like if we start to lose support for whatever reason from the base for like maybe some like redistributive policy or something, like say like someone like Bernie Sanders somehow took over the Democratic Party and started like advocating for things like Medicare for All and whatever, and started to peel off some rural working some rural like kind of white voters and things like that. Or like dampen support amongst like evangelicals, like they'd whip up the Roe v. Wade thing as a kind of like a, you know, in case of emergency, break glass.
And from what we understand, because these appointments are not elected and they are lifetime appointments, if the court decides we're not looking at an abortion case, they're just not looking at an abortion case, and there's nothing the rubes can do about it. You know, that's totally. Why I'm just like, I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it as something they actually care about. We know what they really care about. They care about the corporate money class, like, and ensuring that they get favorable outcomes in the courts. That's it. Yep. Because obviously, deregulation is the law of the land. So it's like they're protected over there as far as the laws are concerned. Now, when it comes to the courts and people, you know, trying to get justice via that route, because no laws have been written to rein these cocksuckers in, they're like, no, we're shutting that off too. So you're just dead in the water if you try to take on the corporate power of the United States.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's really what the court has always done. I mean, that's like what kind of like outside of like very brief moments in history where there was kind of a more liberal court, which was like,
antitrust and breaking up the railroad monopolies, yada, 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 yada. But that's like 100 and something years now, guys.
Yeah, no, it's very, very brief. You know, and, you know, with the Warren court, they did support civil rights and all that thing and all those things. Again, very, very brief moment in history. For the most part, the courts have been a reactionary force against democratic popular will to make people's lives better. I mean, that's the end of the day. I mean, for like the West Wing class of liberals has always like kind of like fetishized the court as like this kind of
why.
I mean, they love it. They love it because
only thing I will say about the Supreme Court is that these guys and gals, a lot of them are very egotistical. And again, because there's no accountability, there are times where these cats will come out and surprise you.
Yeah.
I think I brought it up on the show before, like Gorsuch has like an affinity for Native Americans' rights. Yeah. Like that's like a thing of his. It's like that in nowhere in Republican ideology is that a thing, but that's a thing of his, you know? And so a lot of times you will see these quirks with these guys because again, they're basically untouchable once they get to the court.
And Roberts, who's the Chief Justice, he's kind of like a very savvy dude. He understands that he needs to every once in a while kind of, you know, play the other side to like keep the court's legitimacy. Like, you know, he voted in favor of Obamacare on like an extremely narrow ground, and which kind of like did the best of both worlds. It were like kept the Obamacare, but it did a little too much, you know, by making that the Medicaid expansion wasn't mandatory in all the states. You know, he understands that he's got to play the game a little bit to not be totally like partisan so that it's, you know, but at the end of the day, and even this is something that was even true of Ruth Bader Ginsburg for most of her career. I mean, toward the end of her career, she kind of changed a little bit on this. But like at the end of the day, what matters is like the pro-corporate agenda. Like, yeah, Gorsuch will like, you know, go on some Native American rights thing, but that doesn't affect, you know, the bottom line of Goldman Sachs or ExxonMobil in any way, shape or form, you know? So that's really what the court does. This fetishizing that liberals have of the court is just completely misplaced. And it's purely out of like that West Wing episode where they were like, oh my God, we got like a, you know, a woman who's had an abortion on the court. And like that episode was like, you know, like every liberal kind of like loved that. But like the court is not your friend. The Supreme Court is not your friend in any way, shape, or form.
And it's easy to understand why, because it plays into the liberal ideology of liberals being the people of ideas. And theoretically, when you present some grand argument to the court, your ideas are going to win the day. And it's
well, like, not just that, but like the liberal kind of upset, turning in politics into celebrity worship, you know, like they've turned, oh, they've turned their political leaders into like celebs who are like, I don't know. Stupid. Like that's just, it's very like, you know, the whole notorious RBG thing was like, you know, there was like stickers and stuff, and it, like they turned them into celebs instead of like what they are, which is just political actors deciding the fate of, you know, how resources get distributed in the society. I don't know, but they're like, they love yes queening like their leaders. You know, they love, it's just like a very, it's a very new thing from liberals. I don't know like where it really came from, but it's like 100% true that they turn their leaders into celebrities. And the question, you know, that a lot of people have on their minds, and I understand why, is that what can we do about it? Like, what could they do anything about it? Like, everyone's asking, like, are they going to get one of these kind of psycho women on the court? And the answer is most likely yes. I mean, at the end of the day, they have the votes. Mitt Romney decided, I think it was yesterday, that he was going to vote to confirm the nominee before the election, which pretty much tipped the scales, gave other political cover. Like it's going to happen most likely, especially because the Democrats will not put up opposition.
And that's what we want to bring into our next topic. What can they do, even though we know because they're feckless, weak politicians in the Democratic Party, that they won't ultimately do this and go nuclear on this? Because I don't think they really care. Yeah. But what could they do theoretically to sort of, you know, put a stop to this?
So the thought exercise to be doing is, if what if the tables were turned? What if McConnell was in the minority but leading his minority caucus? And like some Democratic president was putting in a nominee with like 30 days left before an election, right? You got to believe that McConnell will use every parliamentary trick in the book to throw sand in the gears, delay, stop. Like, yep. You know, they might not be ultimately able to stop it, but they can make them sweat for it as much as possible, to the point where
maybe they do have till January, guys. They just have remember till, that. Yeah, it's not until November. It's till January. Yeah.
But the Senate is like a very, 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 very strange institution, right? It's ruled by all these kind of like bizarre, arcane rules from like the 1800s that are not in the Constitution. They're just kind of these rules that the whole Senate abides by. Like there are these kind of very archaic and strange, and no one really knows them outside of like the guy in charge of like the Senate rules, like some fucking nerd in there. It's something that McConnell understands really well, but like, you know, there's all manner of things, like, you know, like whether you can have a committee meeting 2 hours after the day has started, you know, like they're all kind of like from the 1800s, and mm-hmm. McConnell is very good at using every single trick in the book to make it harder to delay, to whatever. Like, you know, one kind of nuclear option is that they could do is like they could impeach Barr, for example. They could impeach William Barr. The House could impeach him like tomorrow. They have all the votes, right? They have a majority in the House. They could impeach William Barr and then force the Senate to have hold a trial over William Barr, and then that would like kind of consume the business of the Senate. Yeah, tie them up. You know, there's a million things they could do, which you have to believe if the situation were reversed, they would do everything in the trick to do it. You know, 100%. Like they could not show up, you know, just they could like physically not show up and like not, you know, not give what's called unanimous consent, which is what allows the Senate to like kind of go out. There's like all manner of like these weird things that you don't have to like worry about, but like just know that they exist.
This isn't even hard to imagine. Just think about a few short years ago when there was a different person in the White House. What McConnell did, it was obstruction, guerrilla warfare at every single turn.
Yeah.
Remember the fucking debt ceiling? Remember that shit where it was a freaking, it was like every single day. It was like, what are we going to do about the next debt ceiling? Right. Blah, blah, blah. Like they were holding the freaking Congress hostage, straight up. The government was held hostage just cause, like not even because of like something where it's like, all right, Barry was doing something that was like unprecedented stuff.
Yeah.
They were just doing it just cause.
Yeah.
And the Dems are going to do what? They're going to browbeat them.
Yeah.
They're going to go on MSNBC. They're going to go on the Sunday show and say, Lindsey Graham said we could use his words against him.
Yeah.
And he's going going against his own words. Can you believe that? Yeah. This is dishonorable.
Yeah.
That's what they're going. That's the strategy. Yeah. That's the fucking strategy here.
No, it's crazy. Like, I mean, the biggest difference between liberals and Republicans is that Republicans understand that when you win elections, you have power that you can use it. The liberals kind of are constantly playing to the reasonableness and hypocrisy referee that doesn't exist. You know, they think there's like some referee out there is like, well, you get 10 points for being consistent and you get 20 points for like upholding rules of decorum, you know, and really that person doesn't exist. You do not get points for consistency. You do not get points for not being a hypocrite. You do not get any brownie points. There's no one out there patting you on the head being like, good boy, you're a good boy. You remain consistent, even though it was politically unfeasible for you or whatever. Like the Republicans understand, like, no, we fucking won. We control this shit, you know, and we get to do what we want.
We're going to do it because we can.
Because we can.
And that's the thing. Like, we're talking about some sort of process nicety, decorum. It's like makeup. It's like the Republicans is just like, wait, this isn't even illegal. We're willing to do shit that's illegal.
Legal.
This isn't even illegal. No, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Why this would we some, not do it?
You know, like we won't want to keep up with tradition, or we don't want to keep our word from just 3 years ago or four years ago. Like, no.
We don't give a shit.
No.
And the thing is, they're right. They're right.
Yeah. You know,
politics is about the naked, raw exercise of power, decide who gets what, you know?
Yep.
And Republicans understand that Democrats are doing the West Wing thing, you know, like they're doing the West Wing thing. They're trying to like appear honorable, reasonable, blah, blah, blah. They think voters give a shit about that. Like outside of like the most hardcore, like MSNBC addicts, like no one gives a shit about that. Like people give a shit about like, well, what do I get? Like is my life going to be better or not? You know? So,
you know, what's so crazy, man. Basically, as much as people laud Barry for his intellect, his this, his that, his blah, 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 it took him 6.5 years to get this shit. Like, where he's like, man, let me just do the shit that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And just, I'm not going to get consensus from the Democratic leadership. I know, obviously, I don't have the Republicans to do. I'm just going to do stuff and keep it pushing. Like, it took him 6 years. At first, he's like, you guys are going against your own policies.
Yeah.
Huh?
What happened there?
You don't even
want
to cut Social Security just a little bit? What? Nah. Idiot. Anyway, there are things, again, and that's just to reiterate what we're talking about here. There are things that can be done.
Yeah.
There are ways to slow this train down.
Yeah.
That isn't going on Meet the Press and bitching about it. Like,
yeah.
There's ways that they can actually do this at their jobs, go to work and do stuff, but they won't.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
And I know you wanted to get into sort of the history of Supreme Court and things like judicial review, and the concept of quote unquote court packing. Mm-hmm. What did you want to get into as far as in regards to those topics?
Well, so, you know, I think I want to reiterate that a lot of this stuff that we take for granted from the Supreme Court is not in the Constitution. Like, if there's a guy that people probably have never heard of, but is probably the guy you've never heard of that is the most powerful American in American history, is a guy named John Marshall, who was the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. He was a Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for something like 40 years or something, like an insane amount of time, kind of right at the beginning of the United States, right? As soon as like the Constitution, you know, everything, like he became kind of the first Chief Justice, and he was there for like the first 40 years, kind of like how J. Edgar Hoover was the director of the FBI for the first 40 years of the FBI. So this guy was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And in 1803, a very young country with a very fresh Constitution had established the three branches of government. But crucially, the Constitution did not say that the Supreme Court had legal authority to like invalidate Congress's laws. You know, this was just not a thing in the Constitution. It still is not in the Constitution. In 1803, there was a case called Marbury v. Madison, which is the most, probably the most important Supreme Court case of all time. It's the one they teach you in every single constitutional history course. If you go to law school, everyone kind of learns about Marbury v. Madison as the most important case. And it was in 1803, and it was a random ass case that doesn't really matter. But the point was that Chief Justice John Marshall asserted the court's right to something called judicial review, which is this idea that the court is the one who ultimately decides whether a law is constitutional or not. And that stuck. That just stuck forever. You know, like, the court basically decides, you know, whether, like, you know, Congress could pass a law. Like, voters can vote in congressional leaders. They then pass laws. The president signs it. And but then the court says, like, wait, no, you can't do that. That's illegal. You know, that is not in the Constitution. That the court could overrule kind of the Congress is not in the Constitution. This is just something that this guy, John Marshall, asserted back in 1803 and everyone just kind of accepted, right? So in theory, and this is something that Matt Brunig talks about a lot and has talked about a lot lately, like, a president doesn't have to listen to the Supreme Court. He does not, or she does not. Like, say Joe Biden won and the Democrats had a majority in the Senate, they could pass a law, and if the Supreme Court invalidated it, they could just be like, no, that's okay. I'm just not gonna listen, and I'm just gonna continue implementing the law. I mean, it would obviously be a very drastic thing because people have accepted it so much, but that's the thing, is like, the Supreme Court is just this kind of it's all upheld, and like so many things in our system, it's upheld by norms, decorum, tradition, not by kind of hard and fast rules. Right? Like, our system is so based on these kind of accepted norms. And there's this one party called the Republicans who just understand that they don't have to follow those norms if they don't want to. And then, but then criticize Dems for, like, you know, breaking norms when, you know, like, when it convenes.
Right, they of don't course, because that's effective strategy.
Exactly. Whereas the Dems kind of are constantly upholding all the norms, you know? So they're at a structural disadvantage there. So, yeah, I mean, they could do a million things. They could just ignore the court. Like, if the court said, you know, Roe v. Wade was not the law of the land, like, the Democrats could pass, say they had the majority, they could pass a law that just said, yeah, no, the abortion is legal in every state, and every state has to have, you know, an abortion clinic every so square miles.
Yeah, and by the way, what they ultimately want are like, what I feel like the goal of a lot of the God botherers and the Bible thumpers is that they want, I know they have the ambition of just ending it in all of America, but at the very least, they wanted to just be like, all right, in Texas, where we run things, nothing. No abortion happens there. None in Mississippi, none in Alabama, none in, you know, Arkansas, none in the Republican strongholds. Let those godless heathens in San Francisco and New York City have all the condomless sex and marriageless sex that they want and have their abortions. Fuck it. We can't control them. They're going to hell anyway. But in our sacred heartland states, no. You cannot kill a fetus there. That's what I think they're ultimately aiming for. And, you know, but the Dems, and the thing is, the Dems never pursue these alternative strategies, right? Yeah. Like, where in states like Kansas and shit like that, where the Republican legislators enacting laws like where, they make laws that make it impossible for abortion clinics to operate.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they don't outright ban it. They just make it impossible for you to operate a clinic. Right. Yeah. Like, the Dems don't do that anywhere. No. They don't skirt Republican orthodoxy by going around it and doing what we want anyway. They just be like, come on, people, vote for us. Right.
And you know who did do that? Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, no, seriously, Abraham Lincoln, this is like the biggest example of what I'm talking about. So in 1857, there was a Supreme Court case called Dred Scott, which said that the Congress did not have the authority to ban slavery in federal territories, right? Like, think about what that means. Like, the Supreme Court said that the Congress, even if the Congress passed a law banning slavery in the federal territories, it was unconstitutional. What did Lincoln do when he was elected? He was like, yeah, I'm just going to ignore that. I'm just not going to listen to that. I'm just going to ban federal slavery in the federal territories. Like, right. I don't give a shit what the court says, because the court doesn't have the constitutional authority over the elected representatives of the people. And like, that's fundamentally where like the liberal kind of fetishization of the court is so problematic to me, is that they're worshiping
undemocratic,
unelected people. You know, these are people who are there for life. These are these like kind of elders, like there's the ancient people reading like scrolls from 300 years ago, deciding like the fate of what happens to us in 2020 is just so absurd on its face.
No sense.
Whereas like it's subverting the democratic will of the people every step of the way.
Believe me, if the Dems had somehow appointed six judges to the Supreme Court,
yes.
I promise you, yeah. The Republicans would do something about it.
Oh, 100%. They are not allowing that. Yeah.
They would just be like, no, you're not allowed to govern. No, fuck that. Hell no.
Yeah, if some like liberal Supreme Court was gutting Republican kind of laws, like say like a Republican president and a Republican Senate passed the law, you know, saying that employers could, you know, employ anyone, like, okay, like basically ending child labor laws, right? For example,
right.
And the Supreme Court said they thought it was unconstitutional. They'd be like, yeah, okay, sorry,
no more Supreme Court, it's over.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there you have it. It's just something you guys should absolutely be thinking about, because, again, we can't stress this enough. there are things that can be done. I know we kind of go ahead, Nando.
What I'll say is, like, the final thing I'll say is, like, where can activists and stuff and people put pressure, right? You know, and in the wake of RBG's death, you know, there was like hundreds of millions of dollars that came in from people, you know, earnestly trying to do something about it, you know, like supporting Democrats and whatever. And like a lot of that went to Amy McGrath, who is the woman that's running against Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. That's just throwing money down the toilet. Amy McGrath is not going to beat Mitch McConnell in Kentucky. Amy McGrath is not, you know, she's just going to lose big time. The real pressure point is Chuck Schumer. You know, like there should be someone should emerge primarying Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer is up, and primarying Chuck Schumer on the grounds that if this man doesn't do everything in his parliamentary power to throw sand in the gears to stop this nominee, like I am primarying him on those grounds. Like that would give that person money. You know, that would put pressure on Schumer, who is the person who can do something about it, who is the right now in the immediate term is the person who can do something about it. Like primarying Chuck Schumer would make him sweat, you know? So that's,
and yeah. And Chuck Schumer is a bit of a villain on this show. And you know, obviously I believe rightfully so, but just think to yourself, like, when's the last time Chuck Schumer won something for the Dems? Like, can you name anything? You can't name one win. You can't name one accomplishment. You can't name something like Chuck Schumer did to sort of, you know, grease the skids. Like, nothing. He's never done anything but put out namby-pamby statements. That's it. He's the king of the namby-pamby worded statement. He's the king of that.
Yeah.
And he's the king of inaction. And he's the king of, you know, essentially inertia. Like, he's just terrible, man. He sucks.
He really sucks.
He sucks.
I mean, outside of like of our ideological differences with him, he just isn't even good at being kind of the, you know, of being the opposition party, even as a representative of a party that we don't feel identified that much with. You know,
all like, you know just, about Chuck Schumer is that he's extremely close to the Israel lobby, which, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And he loves Wall Street. That's it. That's literally all you know about this fool. Nothing else. He stands for nothing.
Yeah.
The other day he tweeted, you know, we should think about decriminalizing the weed.
Yeah, it's like maybe you could do something about it as the leader of the Senate minority leader. Maybe you could do that. But, you know, of course, he's not going to do anything about it.
All right. And lastly, we want to end on a more cultural uplifting note. I did not know about this until maybe 20 minutes before it went on air, and I learned about it from my buddy DJ Night Train. Shouts to El Salvador. He tweeted about, yo, Bad Bunny's about to do a live concert, like right now. Everybody should tune into it. And so, you know, I'm a passive Bad Bunny fan. Funny enough, I want to tell this story. I had went to Dominican Republic last summer for a bachelor party. And it's one of those things, because I don't speak Spanish. And when you spend like 4 days in a country where you don't speak the language, it all becomes this one like drone. Like Spanish just becomes, it's just like, it's like a buzzing. It's like the crickets in the backyard in the summer. It just sort of seeps in the back of your mind as things that you can't, you know, understand, right? And the same happened for the music. It's like, it's just Spanish all day. And like, I just don't speak Spanish. So it becomes this one constant whatever. But one of the records that was a huge record out there, Rob, was Caíta, right? And so I get back to America. Inevitably, my man Night Train gets a gig at this club out here called Poppy on the Latin night. I had never gone to a Latin night ever because obviously I don't speak Spanish. I generally don't listen to the music. But there was something about being at Poppy that night in the booth with Night Train as he's DJing and watching him at the end, like his set crescendo into, you know, the Bad Bunny record and people just losing their minds. And I was like, okay, I finally get it. Like, this dude is tapped into something incredible right now. Like, he is killing it. And then, you know, you start to actually listen to more of his stuff. And this guy has actual flows. Like, he has styles. He has different cadences. Like, he is a versatile, extremely talented artist. Melodies. Like, he's amazing, right? And, again, full disclosure, I grew up in New York City at the time when reggaeton first basically happened.
Yeah.
The first wave of Don Omar and Daddy Yankee.
Yeah.
And Tego Calderon and all of these cats. And I remember, I'm not going to lie, me and my homies as big dancehall fans and hip-hop fans, which is essentially what reggaeton was. It was a melange of dancehall, Jamaican dancehall and hip-hop. We scoffed at it. We looked at it as amateur hour. We was like, these repetitive beats, the same doo. We were just like, yo, what? Like, this is whack, right? Fast forward essentially 20 years, and I'm not gonna lie, the music has absolutely evolved. Like, the styles and the pockets that these cats are tapping into is incredible. And it all culminates, Robin, I'll let you take over, to Bad Bunny doing a concert on a moving bus that's basically it mimicked the subway car, and he's performing on top of it through the Bronx and Harlem and Washington Heights, essentially the most densely populated areas of Hispanics in New York City, which I just thought was genius, just amazing. One of the biggest Latin artists on the planet doing a free concert through one of the biggest Latin communities in all of America. I just thought it was incredible. So, Rob, take it away. Talk to me about Bad Bunny. Talk to me about the concert. And, of course, you're a Bronx native. A Bronx resident right now. So just get into that, bro.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Bad Bunny is, and Nando, you can jump in too, obviously, being a fellow Latino on the call. But
you know, I want to be very clear, because I don't want to get tweets of people like getting mad at me. I am technically not a Latino. I am a Hispanic because I am from Spain, and Spanish whatever people are not means, technically that. Latino, and people get very sensitive true. About that.
Oh, okay, I didn't know about this.
Yeah,
this is 100% true.
I'm not Latinx.
My mom is, you know, almost 50, and she hates the Latinx. She's a Dem, you know, she works for a Democratic senator. She hates the Latinx shit. She's like, I'm Latino, like everybody from Spain, they're Hispanic. It's completely different. But I'm sure, Nando, you still, you know, get the culture and everything.
Yeah.
Your point was, like, Bad Bunny is kind of, if everything they wanted Daddy Yankee to be, it's Bad Bunny, right? So Daddy Yankee was a big deal just because he was, like, one of the first ones coming out of Puerto Rico. And like I was telling you the other day when we talked about it a little bit before Bomb, it's like Bad Bunny comes from this little town in Puerto Rico. And the reason why he did the concert on Sunday was actually, it was the 3-year anniversary of Hurricane Maria. And he was supposed to have a concert in Puerto Rico the reports are from Puerto Rico, wow, is that he's supposed to have a big concert to benefit and everything. So the big thing is that, you know, obviously he had like J Balvin on, which is, and we discussed
another huge artist. Yep.
A star. He's just, J Balvin's like, if you guys don't know, J Balvin's just, you know, he's done, him and it's very important that Bad Bunny and J Balvin are connected, because they also were the two in the Super Bowl performance with Shakira. Mm, yep. And J-Lo. And it's, yeah, very important that those two guys are the two, because they touch on a bunch of different stuff as far as artists. Like Bad Bunny's persona is more of a, it's very close to Prince, right? It's androgynous, very in your face, very flashy. I'm painting my nails. I'm wearing, I'm dressing up as a girl for a music video.
There's a lot of
not the typical Latin machismo.
No, not at all. And there's a lot of chatter about his,
it's like Ricky Martin in the late 90s. It's like, look at this macho dude and he's gay. You know, yeah, right, it's like, sure, you know, everybody has this view of what it's supposed to be. And then J Balvin's a little mix of both, right? He's very flashy, but he's also into like a lot of like very creepy. Like if you watch his videos, he's very dark, very creepy, very dark, very like aggressive.
Also, so the fact Colombian, that, yeah, right?
Yes, he is a Colombiano.
And he's arguably even bigger than Bad Bunny. Like his YouTube numbers, right, are insane. So the fact that, you know, the Bad Bunny can go through the Bronx, like you said, was Puerto Rico. I mean, geez, man, I have family here. I have everybody, you know, you go look out the window right now and there's a Puerto Rican flag out somebody's window. It's just how Puerto Rican people do it. It's just the nature, yeah, of the. So for him to do it, it's a live concert, gets sponsored by Verizon. It was live streaming on this Latino platform that they use in Mexico and like in South America and stuff. They had 10 million people watching it on YouTube. Like it's just, it's insane. And you know, it's also important to note that like Bad Bunny is somebody who's very welcoming. Like everybody, it was weird when he went silent once the pandemic happened and everything. And once Black Lives Matter and everything came out, and people in the community were like looking at him and like, dude, say something. And he went completely ghost. He went silent. He said, I don't want to, he didn't even say anything. And then he came out this week and he said, you know, I didn't say anything because I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to say it. I didn't know what to articulate. I didn't know how to say it. And he was just talking about everybody should love each other. We should all come together. And I hope this helps, you know, bring everybody together. So it's, you know, a lot of people don't know a lot about him because he's very secluded. But if you go, he's weird. He'll be real quiet, and then one day he'll post on Instagram of him dancing, going nuts, and then doing something crazy. He's a big deal, and he's a big time, not only because he's Puerto Rican, but like he's huge. He's, you know, doing stunt. He has Drake on speed dial. You know, he can hit up Khaled, yep, anytime. He works with, yep, Shakira. He works with J-Lo. Like this guy is out of here. And if, you know, if you're listening at home and you don't know anything about his music, definitely check it out. And do the English translations, because to your point was that song Callaita is a good song, but it's really about like a girl who's like really quiet and really reserved and like to by herself, and he wants to break her out of her shell. But it's a good song, you know? So yeah, definitely check it out. Bad Bunny's a big problem out here. Dude,
I know, like my sister and her friends and all that stuff. Like, I mean, it's like they go crazy over some Bad Bunny. I mean, it is, yeah. They love it.
I wanted to get into it, man, because you know we always give Rob a hard time for being the lone wolf Puerto Rican within the bomb crew. But I know Bad Bunny is a sense of just Puerto Rican pride for Rob specifically, yeah, and a lot of people in Puerto Rico. So I just wanted to touch on that. And, you know, again, in New York City, like you cannot avoid Puerto Ricans.
No, okay? You cannot.
And so, you know, I grew up around Puerto Rican people. And so, you know, so it's dope. Right?
Puerto Ricans and roaches. You can't get rid of them. Man,
Puerto Ricans are so fucking fun. Like, first of all, the accent makes me laugh every single time. Like, they're the way with words with Puerto Ricans is like, makes me laugh so much in Spanish. You know, like, it's,
right,
it's
really hilarious.
Kind of the Hicks, but like, but also like, but also very Americanized. Hicks. So they, you know, in Spanish, they use a lot of like funny Americanisms. It's it makes me laugh a lot. Like, and they're just always a good time. Have you ever partied with Puerto Ricans? It's maybe one of the best people on the planet Earth to party with.
And so there you have it, guys. Go make sure you go check out the performance on YouTube. I found it to be very entertaining. I was watching that and the NBA Finals and football at the same time. So shouts to Bad Bunny. Shouts to everybody that put that together.
Shouts to the Miami Heat.
Shouts to the Miami Heat game 4 tonight. The Heat, oh yeah, lead the series 2-1. I'll be locked into that. Make sure you become a patron of Count the Dings, patreon.com/countthedings. Your support helps fuel all the content that we make here for you guys, man. We couldn't do it without your support. Thank you to all the patrons, the current patrons. We appreciate you for sure. Of course, make sure you're subscribed and listening to Let's Pot It Out with my man Nando Vila. And please become a subscriber of the Count the Dings YouTube page. Like, freaking, you know, share, do all of that. We need to game the freaking algorithm so we can get this propaganda out to even more people on YouTube, okay? And so make sure you're checking us out on YouTube. Fernando Vila, I'm Big Waz. And of course, as always, for Rob Lopez on the ones and threes, we're out.
Later.